In the summer of 1974, six teenagers at an arts camp called Spirit in the Woods dubbed themselves the Interestings, a name capturing their youthful conviction they were destined for extraordinary lives. Jules Jacobson arrives as an awkward outsider from the suburbs, carrying the fresh wound of her father's death. The camp represents everything her life in Underhill isn't: artistic, sophisticated, alive with possibility. Her trepidation dissolves when she's welcomed into a circle of talented teens: etherically beautiful Ash Wolf, her magnetic brother Goodman, Jonah Bay, who inherited his famous folk singer mother's musical talent, Kathy Kiplinger, a dancer whose body seems to exist in a different dimension, and Ethan Figman, whose external awkwardness masks a brilliant mind creating worlds through animation. For Jules, this summer catalyzes profound transformation. She discovers her gift for comedy, not just as talent, but salvation. The laughter she generates becomes a lifeline, pulling her from grief's undertow. Their nights stretch endlessly, with passionate discussions about art, authenticity, and their destined greatness, fueled by smuggled wine and youth's certainty. When summer ends, her bedroom in Underhill feels like a cell, decorated with childish remnants of her pre-camp self. The contrast between her middle-class suburban existence and her friends' privileged Manhattan lives creates a yearning that will shape her choices for decades. Everything changes on New Year's Eve 1975 when Kathy accuses Goodman Wolf of rape after a party at the Wolf's Manhattan brownstone. The accusation forces everyone to choose sides. Goodman retreats to his bedroom, drinking vodka and smoking joints, trying to both exist and not exist before his court date. Then he vanishes, passport, birth certificate missing, trust fund drained, leaving only a brief note: "I'm sorry." The Wolf family leverages their wealth and status, hiring top lawyers and crisis PR consultants to quash rumors. The remaining friends return to Spirit in the Woods for a final summer, but the camp's magic feels tainted. 2 years later, in Iceland, Jules discovers the truth. Goodman lives in Reykjavik under an assumed name, protected by their former camp counselor. The Wolves have been secretly supporting him through offshore accounts and forced Jules into silence through manipulation and veiled threats. This rupture becomes the defining schism in their collective story, creating fault lines that influence their relationships for decades. For Jules, the burden of their secret creates an ethical crucible that haunts her for years. As the friends enter adulthood, their paths diverge dramatically. Ethan's cartoon Figland, about Wally Figman, a lonely kid who creates a magical clay planet, catapults him to fame and fortune. Ash, now Ethan's wife, transitions from acting to directing feminist plays, cushioned by family wealth and her husband's success, to pursue art without commercial concerns. Jules abandons acting after recognizing her talent's limits. She marries Dennis Boyd, a kind but depression-prone sonographer, and becomes a therapist. Their life is marked by financial struggle and cramped living conditions. Jonah, despite his musical gifts, pursues mechanical engineering after childhood trauma involving a folk singer who drugged him and stole his music. He designs assistive technologies and eventually partners with Robert, an HIV-positive lawyer. The contrast between Ethan and Ash's enormous life and Jules and Dennis's modest existence creates both connection and tension. Jules is stunned when Media Now lists Ethan among the 100 most powerful people in media. The narrative explores how talent intersects with privilege, opportunity, and chance. Ethan's success stems from extraordinary talent and focus. Ash's career benefits from financial security, while Jules confronts the painful reality that talent alone isn't always enough. Jules' envy of Ash and Ethan's success forms a central emotional thread, a complex feeling she both acknowledges and resists. When their annual Christmas letter arrives from Bending Spring Ranch, Jules and Dennis leave the thick vellum envelope unopened for days, a ritual helping Jules manage her envy. The letters detail a life Jules can barely imagine: hosting actors, expanding charitable initiatives, traveling globally, and raising accomplished children. Jules responds with self-deprecating jokes about dying of a combination of hypothermia and envy. Their living spaces highlight this disparity. Jules and Dennis's modest apartment has inadequate heating and dirty tiles, while Ash and Ethan own multiple homes, including a Colorado ranch with a personal chef. What makes Jules' envy particularly painful is her genuine love for her friends. She recognizes her reactions as small-minded, yet can't suppress them. After Ethan gives her $100,000 during Dennis's depression, her envy becomes closed-budded rather than in bloom. She begins to see that success brings its own complications, maintaining it, the isolation of wealth, and its ethical compromises. Despite Figlin's success, Ethan remains insecure about his artistic integrity even as his wealth grows exponentially. His Jacarna transformation occurs during a vacation after his son's autism diagnosis. During an unofficial visit to a factory producing Figlin merchandise, Ethan discovers children working on his products, deliberately hidden during his official tour. Seeing these children with their dark faces and dark eyes focused on holding squares of shitty fabric under the stuttering piston of a needle, Ethan feels profound shame. This revelation triggers insight. His disconnect with Mo stems not from his son's autism, but from his own emotional limitations. Ethan willed himself to leave that long sleep of believing distant exploitation had nothing to do with him. He responds by moving manufacturing to struggling factories in upstate New York despite financial losses and establishing initiatives for overseas workers. He later confesses to Jules what he hasn't told Ash. During Mo's diagnosis, he was hiding in a hotel, unable to face reality. Most painfully, he admits, "I don't even know that I love him." Jules firmly responds, "Just say to yourself, this is love, even if it doesn't feel like it. He's your little boy, Ethan. Love him and love him." As the friends enter their 50s, they face inevitable losses. Ethan's melanoma spreads to his lymph nodes, forcing everyone to confront mortality. Despite declining health, he continues working remotely on his mastery seminars and Figlin voice recordings. After chemotherapy fails, Ethan and Ash try an alternative Swiss clinic, but he abandons the harsh experimental treatment after 5 days. They isolate themselves while Jules sends desperate, manic emails. In a meaningful moment before his death, Ethan visits Mo's room and listens to him play banjo, moved to tears. This scene captures both their difficult relationship and the possibility of connection even at life's end. Shortly after, Ethan dies of a heart attack. Death transforms the survivors' relationships. Jules and Dennis stay with Ash, who confesses her loneliness, and Jules promises support. Later, Ash sends Jules Ethan's teenage storyboard drawings, revealing his early, unrequited love for Jules. Jules adds these to her Camp Mementos chest, reflecting that life was an animated sequence of longing and envy and self-hatred and grandiosity and failure and success that remained fascinating despite everything. The friends discover that true interest lies not in extraordinary achievement, but in ordinary human connection sustained through extraordinary times.